Hello, and welcome to PubCasts, an ongoing project to experiment with science communication and making research more accessible and digestible to both scientific and general audiences. PubCasts are audiobook-style recordings of peer-reviewed scientific research read to you by the authors. I'm your host today, Dr. Hannah Harrison.
And don't forget about me. My name's Phil Loring. This series of PubCasts is hosted by the Conservation of Change Lab and the Coastal Roots Project. Coastal Roots is a project led by myself and Hannah, and it aims at connecting research and storytelling about successful and novel adaptation to change in coastal communities in Canada and beyond. You can learn more about Coastal Roots by visiting www.coastalroots.org. And check back in with the podcast to listen to new episodes and paper recordings monthly.
PubCasts are inspired by a passion for podcasts, demystifying science and the power of the human voice. Our goal is to give you, the listener, a new way to connect with research, and just as importantly, the researchers. These recordings will focus on trying to communicate a published research article in an engaging and convenient way, and we will sometimes stop to explain a concept, give a short anecdote about the research experience, or emphasize a main point. Our hope is that this format will give researchers and academics a new way to engage with the literature, and for the non-academics out there, a way to hear about new science in a more interesting and digestible way.
To keep things straightforward, you won't hear the in-text citations, long acronyms, or other details that make wading through an academic paper more challenging. But like all peer-reviewed research, this work stands on the shoulders of researchers who came before. So we strongly encourage you to visit the paper online and see the full reference list, and also to enjoy the tables and figures that help explain some of the more interesting findings. And of course, we would love your feedback. If you'd like, please tweet your comments, questions, or suggestions to us at AK Fish Science or at Conserve Change.
Today's paper is Urban Harvests, Food Security and Local Fish and Shellfish in South Central Alaska, written by Hannah L. Harrison and Philip A. Loring. This paper was published in Agriculture and Food Security in 2016. You can read the full text and see the affiliations and other details about the author at the Agriculture and Food Security website. This paper was published open access.
So this paper builds on research that Hannah and I had kind of left in the drawer. We were doing work related to food security in Alaska and the role of fisheries. And in 2009, I had done a number of interviews with people on the beaches of the Kenai Peninsula who were digging for clams. And then a few years later, Hannah did similar work with people who were dip netting for salmon. We didn't do anything with those interviews, but then realized that there were some really interesting emergent themes about how people in an urban area rely on wild foods. And that's not something that people often talk about in the literature on food security in urban places.
All right, let's get into the paper. We'll start with the background. Alaska is known for its many fisheries, which support an extensive global marketplace, a thriving tourism industry, and contribute much to diets and food security of Alaskans. These fisheries have a widespread reputation for sustainability, and while in many cases this reputation is well-deserved, recent declines in regional fish populations and inequities in how the benefits of these fisheries are distributed, both in terms of food and of profit, have brought into question how this sustainability is being evaluated.
Among the primary issues of concern to Alaskans regarding their fisheries is food security, and the role that fisheries currently play and could be playing in ensuring food security for people in both urban and rural parts of the states. In rural Alaska, which is characterized by small, remote communities, wild fish and game are an essential component of people's diets. So it's not surprising that disruptions in fisheries could have significant consequences. In urban centers such as Anchorage, Fairbanks, and their surrounding areas, wild fish and game play a smaller role, though exactly how much fish and game urban residents consume is not well known. Generally speaking, commercially caught seafood is not widely marketed in the state. Instead, it's marketed outside in Asia and the so-called lower 48 states of the United States. Access to local seafood has improved in recent years, for example, through community-based fisheries programs or inclusion of local fish in local school lunch programs. Most Alaskans who utilize wild fish in urban areas often either obtain it through barter and trade or, most commonly, by harvesting it themselves.
Research in Alaska and elsewhere on the role of wild foods in food security and culture has generally emphasized rural communities. Increasingly, however, the importance of wild food in urban communities is also being explored. A recent publication by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game lists urban residents as harvesting roughly a third as much fish and game as rural residents in the state, which is noteworthy given that more Alaska Natives now live in the state's urban areas than in rural villages. In Alaska and elsewhere, it has also been documented that many low-income urban families rely on food sharing from friends and family who are still living in rural areas. Likewise, research on Alaska's Kenai Peninsula shows that food security outcomes for low-income residents are improved by access to local seafood. So, considering that urban low-income residents often face challenges in accessing healthy and affordable store-bought food items, it is therefore really important to look at food security research that explores the role of wild food harvests in achieving more healthful and sustainable outcomes for urban families.
In this study, we discussed two wild seafood harvests that are popular among residents of the largest urban and peri-urban region of Alaska. These are the dip net fishing for salmon in the Kenai River and clam digging on the beaches of the Kenai Peninsula. Our goal is twofold: to provide descriptive information on these understudied aspects of the food system, and also to contribute to the broader discussion of wild food harvests in the lives and experiences of urban Alaskans.
Cook Inlet and personal use fisheries. Wild-caught seafood plays an important role in the lives and livelihoods of Alaskans, particularly in Alaska's largest urban area, the Matanuska-Susitna Valley and Cook Inlet watershed, which is located in the south-central region of the state. Cook Inlet is a stretch of the Pacific Ocean that reaches 180 miles along the west coast of Alaska's Kenai Peninsula, from the Gulf of Alaska to Anchorage, Alaska's largest city. The watershed, and most notably the Kenai River, is home to all five species of North America's Pacific salmon, as well as over half of Alaska's total population, which is more than 400,000 people. The majority of these residents live in the city of Anchorage and the surrounding area, including the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, which is more commonly known as the Mat-Su Borough. The Kenai Peninsula itself hosts a population of approximately 55,000 people who live primarily in small communities of under 5,000 people along the road system.
The Kenai River is especially important in the region with respect to fisheries. The river stretches 82 miles from its source in Kenai Lake in the Kenai Mountains to the mouth near the cities of Soldotna and Kenai. The smaller Kasilof River is also important to local fisheries. It's about 17 miles long. Both rivers are popular sport fishing destinations due to their historically abundant salmon runs, and also the presence of highly sought-after king salmon, and their proximity to the road system. The personal-use salmon fishery, commonly referred to as dip netting, takes place on the beaches along the mouths of both rivers, and they also act as busy corridors for the commercial fishing fleet.
Many Alaskans participate actively in both sport and personal use fisheries, both as a matter of recreation and also to put food in their freezers for the year. Sport fishing designates fisheries that are low catch in nature and done primarily as a matter of recreation. Sport fisheries in Alaska may be accessed by anyone with a sport fishing license. Personal use fisheries, on the other hand, are a special kind of food or subsistence fishery open to all Alaska residents. In addition to a no-fee personal use permit, a sport fishing license is also required to take part in the personal use fishery. Federally managed subsistence fisheries also exist in various places throughout the state, with the priority being use by rural residents who, by and large, are Alaska Native. The personal use designation at the state level reflects a provision in the state of Alaska's constitution that requires that natural resources must be developed for the benefit of, quote, all Alaskans, unquote.
You know, Hannah, I want to point out just a note that even though the sport fisheries are identified as being low catch, we did also do a report a couple of years before this paper that looked at food security of communities in the Kenai Peninsula, and we found that sport fisheries do contribute to people's food security.
So we'll begin with a little bit of information about each of the fisheries we mentioned in this paper. The first is the personal use salmon fishery at the mouth and in the first few river miles of the Kenai River and at the mouth of the Kasilof River, both rivers located on the Kenai Peninsula. These fisheries are open from about July 10th to July 31st each year and typically run from 6 a.m. in the morning till 11 p.m. at night, although those hours can be extended if there's an overwhelming abundance of fish. There is a limit on how many fish can be harvested by any individual household. A permit is required to take part in the fishery. And overwhelmingly, this fishery has become extremely popular, particularly within the last 15 years, with upwards of 400,000 sockeye salmon being harvested from the Kenai River alone by the Dipnet fishery.
So let me tell you a little bit about the clam fishery as well. Clam digging has been historically very popular for residents of Alaska. What people are harvesting are Pacific razor clams, which is a soft-shelled bivalve that's common to the west coast of North America. People have been clam digging at least since 1960s, longer, of course, for the region's indigenous populations. Their fishery reached its height in the 1980s, where people were harvesting as many as 1 million clams per year. Now, you can dig for clams year-round in Cook Inlet, but most digging occurs between April and September, and usually at the lowest of the low tides. Now, recently, as of 2015, the beaches on Cook Inlet for clam digging have been closed because of dramatic and unexpected declines in the numbers of clams. To our knowledge, no research is going on that explores the social impact of these closures and the extent to which it impacts local food security.
The methods of this paper are quite rich and offered in depth, and we encourage you to go and read the full manuscript if you're interested in learning all of the details about how we conducted this research. In place of that, I'm going to just give an extremely brief overview of what we did and where we did it. So the interviews that were conducted on the Kenai River dipnet fishery were conducted in July of 2012 on the Kenai River dipnetting beaches and with 71 people. We did opportunistic, very short form interviews as people were fishing, cleaning fish, or otherwise spending time on the beach.
And I did a very similar thing in 2009 down on the beaches of Clam Gulch Beach and Inilchik Beach, also in the Kenai Peninsula, with the short form interviews of people who were digging for clams or processing their clams and so forth. And incidentally, I also helped with some of the dipnet interviews as well.
Indeed.
Now, in both of these, one of the reasons that we realized we had a real opportunity for comparative analysis is that we asked very similar questions. We asked people where they were from for things like their zip code, and also why they were there, not just as a matter of food, but also the other benefits that they got from participating in the fishery.
Right, and we often ask them about the types of investments they had made to take part in the fishery. So the time spent, the financial resources required to travel to the fishery, take part for often several days at a time, and other things that were maybe less easy to quantify, like the ways that they were spending time with their family, teaching their children about the fishery and about the natural resource, and interacting with the environment around them.
Right. And then finally, we did ask everybody their thoughts on the status of the fishery, whether they thought it was being managed and fished sustainably or not.
So we'll now move into the results of this paper, starting with the clam digging results.
Yeah, everybody I spoke with on the beach talked to me about how they had dug clams there for many years. Many couldn't remember, and using phrases such as, "I can't as long as I can remember," or "all of my life." One Alaska Native woman that I spoke with replied, quote, "We have done this forever," end quote, emphasizing the traditional and customary importance of the practice to her people. When asked about why they dig, all 26 also responded that the clams were for food. 7 mentioned that the clams are, quote, "free" or "cheap," and that this was important to them given the extremely high prices of food and fuel being experienced at that time in Alaska. 3 diggers added a caveat that the clams did not provide a major source of food, but they were important nonetheless for special occasions and for gift giving. 12 people noted that clam digging was something that they enjoy or find comfort in. Generally, clam digging in the Kenai is a quiet affair. One person called it meditative. And this contrasts notably with the frenetic atmosphere of dip netting that we're going to talk about in a minute. 8 of the 18 Alaska Native that I spoke with discussed a family tradition of clam digging in the early summer, as did 2 of the Caucasian respondents. With respect to family, among all that were interviewed, only 4 were digging alone. I noticed more than 20 children, varying in age, participating with their family members to some degree or another. One group digging was a collection of graduate students from the University of Alaska. Though the individuals interviewed hailed from the region and reported having dug with friends and family for most of his life. Now, some groups of diggers brought with them recreational supplies such as chairs, food, children's toys, and firewood, in addition to the shovels, buckets, and wet gear that are necessary for digging. When the tides rose, at least 4 groups were observed cooking clams on the beach over campfires. The students had camping gear as well, and they reported that they were spending the weekend on the beach. When asked what people would do with the clams, and that is, in terms of preservation and storage, many people mentioned freezing them, or canning some of them, and some mentioned that they would smoke the clams. Specifically regarding sustainability of the fishery, 11 people expressed concern to me that there were too many people harvesting. And 6 of these also noted that it took them longer in the past to dig their limited clams. Another 4, however, felt that the clams were larger and more abundant than they had ever seen. The remaining 11 had no opinion or felt unable to comment. 4 of them deferred to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as having, quote, good control. I also heard from 9 harvested concerns about whether the clams would continue to be safe to eat in the future. Many people specifically mentioned algal blooms and paralytic shellfish poisoning, or red tide as people call it. Another 2 mentioned pollution, and 1 talked about climate change.
Now let's talk about the Kenai River dipnet fishery. Though study participants reported a number of reasons for engaging in the dipnet fishery on the Kenai, 3 specific themes arose with almost every respondent: issues of food security, time spent with family and, by extension, friends, and fishing as an important recreational activity. All but a few respondents cited using their fish for food as the primary reason for participating in the dipnet fishery. While some people prioritized the recreational aspect of fishing first, most respondents said that they were fishing to, quote, fill the freezer, and discussed the various ways by which they preserve salmon, such as smoking, freezing, jarring, or canning. Respondents indicated some degree of reliance on their fishing activities to supplement their diet in the winter months, ranging from, quote, this is our meat for the winter, to I'm on food stamps and this fish sure helps, or we wouldn't starve without salmon, but we surely wouldn't be able to afford eating as healthily without these fish, end quote. Others confirmed the perceived importance of the nutritional value of salmon. One man fishing with his wife said, quote, we're in graduate school, so we need cheap but good food, especially with her, meaning his wife, being pregnant, end quote. Others described salmon as an important part of their Alaska diet, indicating that they enjoyed harvesting their own food and that they experienced gratification for being self-sufficient and supplying their own meat each year. Some respondents said that if they were unable to catch their own fish, they would not choose to purchase replacement salmon, preferring or being forced to go without. Many fishers prioritized the personal value of dipnetting as a chance to spend time with friends and family. All but one of our respondents were fishing with either a coworker, friends, or family, and many parties included children, ranging in age from infants to teenagers. Several families described fishing as an important family time activity and indicated the importance of outdoor activities as a chance to teach their kids important life lessons, such as respect for the environment, hard work, and harvesting their own food. Many groups had designated a site on the beach with varying degrees of elaborate setups. One man fishing with his wife said that for him, fishing was, quote, a break from work to spend time with my wife, end quote. Another 28-year-old man said he had been fishing all of his life and now was teaching his own children how to dipnet, indicating the importance he placed on fishing as a traditional activity within his family.
And when she says elaborate setups on the beach, I would just want to explain what she's talking about, because this is a case where people are driving their trucks right out onto the beach, setting up enormous tents and awnings and grills and roping off entire areas for their family. And the end result is sort of this mosaic of like a shanty town with porta potties and roads, and it really is quite a sight to see.
And this actually has posed a big challenge for the city of Kenai, which is the municipality responsible for taking care of these beaches and the people who use them. And that is being able to deal with a large volume of people, the waste disposal, the traffic, public safety. And since we've did this research, there's actually been many improvements to this area to try and improve parking, permitting access to the beach, and protecting the zones around the beach where there are a lot of sand dunes and grasses that stabilize the area. When asked if they view the Kenai River salmon fisheries as sustainable, respondents had mixed responses. Many respondents indicated that they felt the fishery was sustainable, though nearly every person couched this response in a justification. For example, one man said, quote, yes, I get the fish I need, and they, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, have us fill out these cards to report our catch, end quote, indicating that he associates reporting and regulations with sustainability of the salmon resource. Similarly, another fisher said, quote, yes, there are rules and regulations for a purpose, while another commented, quote, more data means better management, end quote. Many people commented on the large number of returning salmon as evidence that the fishery was being managed well, and many people also indicated that their confidence in the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as an institution. As one man said, Fish and Game knows what they are doing, and there are more fish here every year, even though there are also more people fishing every year. Other fishers, however, were a little less certain about sustainability. Many respondents were optimistic but uncertain, saying, quote, "I hope so," or "I'm not sure." Others contextualized their uncertainty in their own behaviors and the behaviors of others. For example, one woman said, quote, "I don't know. We try to be responsible, though." Another man said, quote, "It should be, but it depends on whether people can be responsible and not take too many fish," end quote. He also noted that he had seen people, quote, "taking too many," a concern many respondents shared of not seeing what they considered to be adequate representations of enforcement patrolling the fishery, such as the Alaska State Troopers or Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Another woman said that she had, quote, "no idea. This year seems like a slow start, though. The first year, we got 35 fish in the first hour," end quote. Her comments indicated a phenomenon we noted throughout our interviews, that fishers have strong expectations for the salmon to show up during particular days during the season, and relating their own harvest success to past experiences in the activities of other users in this fishery, such as the commercial fleet and sport fishermen. A few respondents reported that they did not think the fishery was sustainable, with most citing concerns of bycatch and overfishing from the commercial Cook Inlet fleets. Many fishers commented about crowding on the beaches as well, especially when we were sampling during a high tide where there was very little beach space to use and people often fished shoulder to shoulder, or on the weekends where many fishers from areas off of the Kenai Peninsula visited to go dip netting. The next section of this paper is called Perceptions of Others, and we put this in so that we could give an opportunity for us to discuss the way that dip net fishers perceive other user groups in this area. And the reason that we do that is because the fisheries in Cook Inlet are highly contested, particularly between the dip net fishery and the Cook Inlet commercial salmon fleets.
That's right. And also with conflict between the sport fishery and the commercial fishery, it's really just a hotbed of conflict.
It really is. And we do a lot of other, or did a lot of other research at the time on these, and you can find those in our other publications. But one point I just want to note before going on into the discussion is that we found that many of the dipnet fisher participants were often not particularly well informed about the nature of the other user groups, the other gear types that were taking place in Cook Inlet, particularly the Cook Inlet commercial salmon fleets.
Right. And that lack of understanding is often one of the reasons you see in conflicts, myths about the other groups that you blame for concerns regarding sustainability. Okay, so now we're going to move into the discussion of these results. In both sets of the interviews, while they weren't intended or designed to be representative of all fishers in either fishery, clearly what we found was that personal use fisheries in the Kenai Peninsula are indeed important to urban Alaskans and for multiple reasons, whether food security, family and tradition, or recreation. For some dipnet fishers, store-bought options were simply not sufficient as an alternative to wild-caught seafood. In some cases, this is because of high prices, but in others, it's because Alaska seafood is simply not available in grocery stores on the Kenai Peninsula. For some, however, their preference is based on the fact that they value catching the fish themselves more than they do having the fish, regardless of where the fish comes from.
Our findings match those of other authors, highlighting how urban spaces can be subsistence spaces and demanding, perhaps, that policy recognize this reality as an important parameter for securing socially just fisheries and food systems. The constitutional requirement in Alaska that underpins these personal use fisheries may be an important case study for policy in this regard. Yet, not all people in Alaska have the time, resources, or inclination to fish for themselves, meaning that food systems which emphasize direct access to wild foods through individual harvest may still fall short of ensuring equitable outcomes for all. Some form of a blended approach to fisheries governance that also promotes affordable access to seafood through local markets is likely important to truly achieving sustainable food security.
You know, this follows up on the other research we did where we surveyed households and their access to locally caught seafood in the same region. And we found essentially the same thing, that if you had access, that's great. But there were some people that just didn't have the time, opportunity, or inclination to fish, and that impacted their food security.
Indeed. And one of the other findings from that study that links closely to the point we're making here is that it's really important to have a lot of diversity in how seafood is available in local areas. So, for example, people catching it, it being available through commercial processors, and also through local markets so that people have a variety of access points to these local foods.
This aspect of how many urban residents value the personal use fisheries, they value, they see in catching the fish themselves, is important also because it reinforces what we know about food security as encompassing more than just mere access to calories and nutrition. It also challenges persistent stereotypes about urban peoples being disconnected from or apathetic to their proximate environments. specific foods and food procurement traditions, and how these fit into identity, culture, and social relations have been discussed as important to rural Alaskans, and they are clearly important for urban residents as well. Many of the fishers that we spoke with talked about the importance of time spent harvesting, and one fisher specifically described the activity as part of Alaskan culture. The same was observed for clam digging, that people consider the practice important to their food security, despite the fact that the total harvest does not contribute significant overall calories or nutrition to their annual diets. The clams are important as gifts, as foods consumed during special occasions, and the digging itself is valued for family and cultural tradition. Given how important people's connections to their environments can be, both for their own well-being and also to the likelihood of achieving sustainable practices, these personal and cultural aspects of the clam and salmon fisheries should not be undervalued. And I just want to reiterate, I think that's one of the more important aspects of this study, that we are sort of slaying the sacred cow that people who live in urban environments are disconnected from the environment.
Multiple people from both fisheries also expressed concern over the future sustainability of the fisheries, and responses to our questions on this topic produced several main themes. First, many respondents associated the presence of regulations and regulatory enforcement officials as indicators of a sustainable fishery. This high level of trust in the process of management is noteworthy given the rancorous conflicts over fisheries in this region, which we've already mentioned. Some respondents interpreted the simple abundance of fish and their opportunity to harvest them as signs of a sustainable fishery as well. Likewise, many situated sustainability as a matter of individual responsibility and collective action, but noted too that this can be problematic if others do not act in the same responsible manner. To that point, many dipnoters also indicated that they have limited familiarity with the fishery and admitted that they pay little attention to the fishery outside of the actual fishing season. By comparison, those people with concerns for the clam fishery all had many years of experience digging on these specific beaches, and their concerns regarding over-harvesting were ultimately confirmed when the beaches were closed to digging in 2014.
So the upshot here is that this is an emerging urban fishery. And what I mean by that is, as noted earlier, the majority of our interview respondents were from the Anchorage and Matsu area. The popularity of the dipnet fishery on the Kenai River has grown significantly since permits have been issued. And with this growth, it is clear that the fishery has become more and more popular over the years, with many people from around the state taking part as well. While our sample size is too small to support conclusions representative of all the users accessing the dipnet fisheries, we nevertheless have strong evidence that this fishery is indeed providing the urban populations in the state, both indigenous and Euro-American, with an opportunity to harvest fish and engage in a nature-oriented recreational activity.
At the same time, the personal use fishery has become heavily politicized as it emerges as a significant consumer of Kenai River salmon in an already contentious atmosphere of allocation wars in Upper Cook Inlet fisheries. Other user groups, especially the commercial gillnet fleets of Cook Inlet, view the personal use fishers as a poorly informed yet powerful voting bloc. Indeed, some personal use respondents did indicate strong negative feelings about the commercial and sport fisheries, though most appeared willing to at least share the resource.
The state of Alaska, for its part, supports the dipnet fishery by providing some regulatory measures, such as catch reporting cards and Alaska Department Fish and Game oversight, as well as maintaining a few barriers to entry, permits that up to now have been free to obtain. Locally, too, the city of Kenai has taken on the task of providing restroom facilities, local enforcement, parking services, beach cleanup, and a number of other services that are not without cost. While the city does reap some benefit of the increased traffic to local businesses and some built-in fees, the demand on city personnel and resources of the dipnet fishery is significant. Despite these burdens, the personal use fishery appears to appeal to a sense of independence and entitlement, and many people across Cook Inlet user groups indicated that they place the Alaskan ability to harvest one's own local food as paramount to nearly any other use of salmon.
Now, this aspect of the dipnet fishery being an opportunity for people to have the ability to harvest their own local food is especially noteworthy in the context that most commercial caught Cook Inlet salmon is exported out of the state of Alaska. And it is clear that there is a demand for affordable, fresh, and frozen Cook Inlet salmon in local markets. While it was outside the scope of this study, it is possible that improved access to local caught seafood in Alaska food markets would decrease the direct personal use harvest pressure on the Kenai River, or at least provide alternatives to those fishers who are not successful in their harvest efforts. Redirecting commercially caught wild seafood toward markets in Alaska may also change the image of commercial fishers in the minds of some locals. From its current state of being economically focused, as reported by some of the detonators in this study, to that of an important food provider for Alaskans, or at least more so than it already is.
But not to go so far as to say that it's a panacea. As you said earlier, diversity in where people are getting their seafood is really important.
Exactly.
Now, looking back to the clam digging, one of the things that we want to discuss is how some fisheries and some uses of the environment can become privileged by policymakers and such over others. And I think the personal use clam fishery is a case in point. Though long present in the peninsula, the clam fisheries fly under the radar, so to speak, in terms of their contributions to local people's food security and culture. This is despite documented participation by Alaskans in the fishery for at least 50 years, and by Alaska Natives for far longer than that. According to Harvest Survey collected in 2011, 30% of Kenai Peninsula residents harvest clams, and two-thirds of those are from low to medium income households. So while the clam fisheries likely no longer represent a significant contribution to the local food systems in terms of calories or nutrition, especially since they're closed, our research suggests that their contributions were nonetheless numerous. The activity of digging is a treasured family tradition for many, and the clams appear to be thought of by many harvesters as something of a local delicacy, considered important for gift-giving and special occasions.
Indicative that the state of Alaska does not consider this fishery mainstream is that it explicitly recommends against people consuming the clams that they dig, and what uses of clams that they do sanction is unclear. Likewise, there is no monitoring by the state of Alaska regarding the safety of these clams or any shellfish on any beach throughout the state, for that matter. As mentioned earlier, several diggers were aware that there could be times when the clams were unsafe to eat, yet they accept this risk nonetheless. The state has chosen to excuse itself from this aspect of public health, transferring responsibility, and ostensibly liability, to the individual by making facts about the health risks available online. In their words, quote, "If you choose to harvest shellfish in Alaska, it is important that you know the facts about paralytic shellfish toxin, know the species you plan to harvest, and know the symptoms of paralytic shellfish poisoning, and get help quickly," end quote. Come on.
Whether the state can excuse itself from this responsibility is perhaps a question for another paper. But what is clear for the discussion at hand is that the clam fishery is in a gray area as far as being a state-sanctioned space for food procurement. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game monitors the clam populations and tolerates harvests as long as they are not a threat to conservation, but they fall short of validating this activity as anything more than recreational.
One final point of comparison among the two fisheries involves the dramatically different atmospheres they exhibit. Dip netting is a chaotic, festive event where crowds, noise, bonfires, tents, beer, and a high-intensity atmosphere are the norm. By comparison, clam digging is a quiet and solitary affair, described by one interviewee as meditative. The messiness of the dip net fishery has been a target of criticism, with the implication that the apparent free-for-all indicates an inherently unsustainable fishery. A highly visible example of the tragedy of the commons, perhaps. However, with the caveat that we know of no research exploring the ecological impacts on the beaches themselves, there is no evidence that the dip net fishery on its own is unsustainable. Further, we know from the study that the fishery is an important way that these people interact with the environment, and many participants likewise hold sustainability of the fishery as a top priority. I do want to insert just a little caveat here that at the time that this was written in 2015-2016, there was not much research on the ecological impact of the dip net fishery on the beaches and the water quality, but that has since changed, and there has now been some significant evidence that the dip net fishery does create unsafe and water conditions, particularly with E. coli contamination.
And as I mentioned previously, the clam digging is a much more meditative event. And I think it's interesting. I think it reveals a bit of a cultural bias that expects local food harvests to embody some sort of bucolic aesthetic. This is common in local food movements, and it's an idea that may contribute to many failures of these movements to serve more than just the middle and upper class members of society. Urban spaces are densely populated, and it makes little sense to expect that a large-scale individual access fishery in an urban area will embody a rural feel. Rather, the still young dip net fishery may be evolving into something more similar, perhaps, to the large-scale, vibrant, and busy street markets common to urban centers in Southeast Asia. Alaska, being a state that is still generally low in population, compared to its vast geography, So it's not surprising that many people who are otherwise accustomed to low-density fishing experiences would find the atmosphere of the dipnet fishery jarring or troubling. Nevertheless, as long as the activity does not prove detrimental to environmental health and quality, or with this new research, hopefully they find a way to mitigate these impacts, I think that people's expectations may change over time as this fishery becomes more institutionalized within urban Alaska culture.
So now we'll conclude with just a few last remarks. It's important to understand that these urban fisheries are more than simply wild food harvest, but they also exist as important cultural, social, and in a way, traditional activities for Alaskan residents. People engaging in both the personal use salmon and clam fisheries care about the ongoing sustainability of these resources, both in terms of a local food resource and a resource that is tied to the feelings of Alaskan identity and agency. Additionally, fishers engaging in small-scale food fisheries play an underutilized role in supporting the local economy on the Kenai Peninsula, and on a global scale are participating in a well-regulated, sustainable salmon fishery instead of purchasing fish harvested in exploited or industrialized fisheries from outside of Alaska.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PubCasts. Today's episode was a reading of Urban Harvests, Food Security and Local Fish and Shellfish in South Central Alaska, published in Agriculture and Food Security, and authored by Hannah Harrison and Philip Loring. To hear more podcasts, visit the Conservation of Change Lab website at conservationofchange.org or the Coastal Roots website at coastalroots.org. Thanks.